Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on this Tuesday and this beautiful day here in Nashville. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you. Let's talk a little fantasy football. Let's try to help you out. It's just 1 week, folks. It's like the Titans game. It's 1 week. Don't panic. It's a long ways to go if you didn't get off to a good start. And help us with all that. Joe Dolan is on the line with us. He is, of course, with at Fantasy Points. He is the guru of fantasy football. We've had him on many times over the years. He does a great job, and he is here to help us. He's here to help you. Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. It was an eventful week one. There's no doubt about it. We have a longer season, though. If you lost in week one, guess what? You have one extra week to make it up this year. So it's a long season, and I'm hunkering down.
That's right. That's a good way of putting it. And let's start last night. We know the news with the Ravens. They've just been ravished with injuries at running back, and they just kept dropping like flies. Well, how big are you on Tyson Williams moving forward? How, you know, last night he had the touchdown, I think, what, 65 yards rushing. Moving forward, what do you like him as maybe the main guy? I know they've signed a couple washed-up dudes, but what do you think about him?
Yeah, so I was overall really encouraged by him. I thought he looked a lot better than Latavius Murray did, but it is clear to me that at least for the time being that Tyson Williams and Latavius Murray are going to be the two main backs here. And, you know, this is a guy who was an undrafted player who, you know, like, he was going to make the team, certainly following the J.K. Dobbins injury, but I think he might have made it regardless. But the fact that they trusted him to play over half the snaps out there, he played 51% of the snaps last night. I thought he looked pretty explosive. He caught three passes. That is the guy I want in the Baltimore backfield. I know Latavius Murray was kind of in there at the end of the game, kind of hoping to close things out. He scored the touchdown as well. And Latavius Murray is certainly somebody worth having on a fantasy bench. But Tyson Williams is younger. He's more explosive. Kind of an angular dude. You know, he almost looked like he was built like a receiver. And I was impressed with his burst. So. A good start for Tyson Williams, and if you started him for fantasy, you know, maybe you had Gus Edwards and, you know, you picked him up off the waiver wire, I think you have to be really encouraged by what you saw. I think he's kind of like a high-end running back three for fantasy right now, low-end running back two, but the potential to be a lot more than that.
Mostert is out in San Francisco.
Yep.
Where do you see, where's the direction with their backfield? Where would you go?
San Francisco was the team that threw us for the most loops in week one. So at 11:30 Eastern, when inactives come out, Trey Sermon, who was their third round running back pick, and as you guys know, in this day and age in the NFL, a third round pick on a running back is a pretty premium pick. So all season in fantasy, everybody was drafting Trey Sermon with the eye towards the future, thinking this guy's going to take the job from Mostert. Mostert can't stay on the field. This guy was a third round pick. It's a great run scheme. This is the guy who's going to take the job. Well, it comes out he's inactive, and they say he was outplayed by not just Mostert but Jamichael Hasty and Elijah Mitchell, who also is a rookie. He was a sixth rounder out of Louisiana Lafayette. Well, not only does Elijah Mitchell get on the active roster over Trey Sermon, Raheem Mostert gets hurt after two carries. He's out for a couple of months, and Elijah Mitchell goes nuts. He runs for over 100 yards in that game. He runs for a touchdown. That is the guy who, if you're looking for the hot waiver wire guy in fantasy football this week, Elijah Mitchell of the San Francisco 49ers is the guy. He's listed as Eli Mitchell on Yahoo, if you play on Yahoo, by the way. But that's the hot waiver wire guy. That being said, Kyle Shanahan also came out and, you know, and said Brandon Ayuk, who was their first-round receiver last year, who had a great rookie season, he didn't get a target in week one. He played less than half the snaps, and Kyle Shanahan came out and essentially said, yeah, he got outplayed in training camp. they were essentially teaching him a lesson. So I wonder if these are motivational tactics to Brandon Ayuk and to Trey Sermon. And, you know, at some point, you know, I'm not closing the coffin on Trey Sermon just yet. But for now, you know, Elijah Mitchell has earned carries. Like, he's going to keep getting the football. Trey Sermon's going to be active then, because we know Raheem Mostert's out. Trey Sermon's going to be active, but he's got to earn his way into that rotation. But just a couple of really strange things happened with San Francisco that I'm not sure if we can take stock in week two moving forward.
Interesting. I shouldn't have bounced from the Raiders-Ravens game just yet, because I did have one more on that game. On the Raiders side of things, we all know Darren Waller is the stud. He is their go-to guy. But there were some guys that stood out, especially late in the game. Bryan Edwards and Hunter Renfro. Do you like either one of those guys moving forward?
I much prefer, like, Renfro is one of those guys, I think, like, half the teams in the NFL have them, where, like, for fantasy, they're guys who you can put in your lineup and they can get you 4 for 50 in a pinch, but they're not really somebody you want starting for your team on a weekly basis. I'm going to shoot for upside. That's going to be Bryan Edwards. And, you know, he disappeared in that game. I know Derek Carr ended up throwing for 435, but for most of that game, I didn't think Derek Carr is very sharp at all. And so Bryan Edwards didn't get involved until really late, and then he started to emerge. He was a guy who had gotten so hyped up by the coaching staff this offseason. That's the guy I want for Oakland, but for Vegas. And you know at this point, like, who their number one receiver is, though. It's Darren Waller. I mean, Darren Waller had 19 targets in that game.
Wow.
Everybody else is ancillary to Darren Waller. Yeah, 19 targets. I don't believe there was a single player who had more targets in week one than Darren Waller.
Boy, it seemed like it, but I did not know the number was 19. Wow, I didn't look at that. But
yeah.
Wow, watching the game, it certainly jumped out at you. Joe Dolan is with us, managing editor at Fantasy Points. You should follow him. He's a great, great follow. A lot of expertise on fantasy football. So, Joe, what do you think we learned? Chase and I co-own a team in this league. And
okay.
We took a little late flyer, grabbed the Jets running backs, got them both late. Just seeing how it's going to shake out, of course, not much in week one, but like it's always interesting. The Texans would be another team, like weak offenses, weak teams, but somebody's going to get the ball. So what do we learn about the Jets?
What we learned about the Jets is that their offensive line is a disaster, and they just lost Mekhi Becton for an extended period with a knee injury. Those are guys, I'm not trying to pick on you, but the Jets running back situation and the Texans running back situation right now, I think they're sucker bets. Like, they're bad teams. Now look, you saw what the Texans did. They just beat up on Jacksonville. Do not be shocked if this week against the Browns, the Texans backfield looks like what the Jets backfield looked like in week one. You know, the Jets, Tevin Coleman averaged, 2.5 yards a carry, got 24 yards. Ty Johnson averaged under 4 yards a carry. Michael Carter averaged under 2 yards a carry. So that is not a backfield unless I'm in a super deep league that I want somebody on my roster, quite frankly. I hope my league mates aren't listening, but in one league I'm in right now, I did take a flyer on Michael Carter.
Yes.
I'm dropping him like a bad habit for Elijah Mitchell. there's no upside. So here's the way I evaluate this. Can I see myself putting one of those players in my lineup right now? If I put Michael Carter in my lineup right now, I am hurting bad. So I'm going to use that roster spot for somebody who I can use right now. And I feel the same way about the Texans. I know Mark Ingram had 26 carries. If you expect that going forward, congratulations. I mean, you can have them. I'm not going to be putting my toes in those waters.
It's a great point. So let's go the other way. Let's go with a week one flop. You know, somebody that you saw, Joe, that maybe somebody, a lot of people drafted early that it just didn't happen. You mentioned the story of the guy that didn't get a target for Ayuk, that didn't get a target for the 49ers. He was our opponent in our fantasy league, so we were very thankful that he did not get a target, because that's a big old zero.
No indication of that whatsoever.
Yeah.
At least Sermon was inactive, but there was no indication until that game started that Ayuk was benched.
Yes. Okay, so maybe a high pick that didn't do well in week one that you're not ready to panic on yet.
I hate to open sores, but Derrick Henry.
Okay.
I just think the Titans got boat raced. I think the offensive game plan was trash. Ryan Tannehill, who's been one of the best play-action passers in the NFL since he arrived in Nashville, you use two play-action passes. I know you're losing that game a bunch, but, like, come on. I mean, Arizona's cornerback situation is trash. I just think the Titans are going to rebound. Derrick Henry is a guy I'm not going to panic on, but we do need the Titans to pick it up offensively because Derrick Henry in his career has been exceptionally game script dependent. He is far better in wins than he is in losses. He's actually basically half as effective for fantasy in losses as he is in wins. And the Titans being from behind was not good news for Derrick Henry. And then, of course, there's the Green Bay fiasco. I just think Green Bay completely no-showed. Their entire roster, who was drafted highly for fantasy, Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones were both first-round picks. Those guys did nothing in week one. Aaron Rodgers was atrocious. I just think those guys are going to rebound. I would be putting in offers for Devontae Adams and Aaron Jones in my league right now. I just think it was just a really bad game for Green Bay.
We're talking to Joe Dolan, Fantasy Points, as we break down some fantasy football stuff. Okay, so when one guy that had a really good week for us on our team was Corey Davis that we got to know here. Mm-hmm. In Nashville, do you think that is a 1 week thing? You got to be careful to start him every week, or with the lack of targets that they have there, that Zach Wilson's going to rely on a veteran receiver, especially early on.
This was a continuation of what we saw in the preseason when Zach Wilson was really leaning on Corey Davis, and you know this is a situation like bad running back situations behind bad offensive lines. I'm not likely to dabble with those. But a rookie quarterback is going to have to throw the football at some point. The Jets are going to be behind quite a bit. Now, Corey Davis is for real for me. I'm not trying to tell you that he's DeAndre Hopkins. I'm just saying that I think for wide receiver three on your roster, he's a really good guy to have. And, you know, they have that their number two receiver this week was Elijah Moore, the rookie from Mississippi, who didn't really do a whole lot but played quite a bit. It was obvious that Zach Wilson preferred Corey Davis over Elijah Moore. So that is a guy who is absolutely worth rostering.
Okay, so we saw firsthand Christian Kirk, Rondell Moore, what they did, A.J. Green, you know, what they did to the Titans. Now, A.J. Green wasn't as much, but a lot of people we talked to feel like that he's practicing and playing some in the preseason like the old A.J. Green. What do you think about those three outside of DeAndre Hopkins as potentially being, you know, roster players for a fantasy team?
Yeah, so here's the problem I have with A.J. Green. Kyler Murray comes out. There's very little resistance. DeAndre Hopkins can do what he wants in that game. Christian Kirk, who has long been one of the biggest teases in fantasy football, can do whatever he wants in this game. Rondale Moore comes out and goes 4-for-68 in his first game as a pro. A.J. Green was last year statistically the worst wide receiver in professional football. He was inefficient. He caught less than half his targets. His yards per target were bottom of the barrel in the NFL. His effectiveness was bottom of the barrel. 6 targets, 2-for-25 for A.J. Green. In a game where all of his teammates go off, that's bad news for me. So I needed to see A.J. I was willing to open my eyes and say, hey, look, if A.J. Green puts the Bengals behind him, okay, like, we'll see. But what I saw there in week one, that is by far the last of those four guys that I want on that team. I'm a juice guy. I like going for that upside. Rondale Moore is the guy I'd be interested in beyond DeAndre Hopkins. Christian Kirk, to me, he's been a tease. He's had games like this in the past where he scores multiple touchdowns. Then you play him the next week and he goose eggs you. Rondale Moore is the guy who I think his role is going to increase going forward for the Cardinals. I think Cliff Kingsbury is going to use him creatively. That's the guy I'm most excited about, with the exception of DeAndre Hopkins here in the receiving corps.
In another league, I took a flyer on Jamar Chase, even though he didn't have a great training camp.
Yeah.
And I left him on the bench. You know, what? How do you view him as, you know, obviously he's a rookie. It's hard to tell, but how do you view him moving forward?
Yeah. Oh, I think he's a must start. And see, this is the other thing with preseason. You know, Adrian Groh, he's had a great camp. Jamar Chase drops a couple of passes in the preseason and everybody panics on him. I got him so late in some of the last drafts I did where I'm just like, you know, I was like you. I'm like, you know, he's a rookie, but look, there's a discount here. This guy was a 4th-round pick for fantasy prior to the preseason, and then he drops a couple of passes, and then he's available in the 7th and 8th round. Here's the deal with Jamar Chase. He led the Bengals wide receivers in snap share. He played 90% of the snaps. He played more snaps than T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd. He ran more routes than T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd. He saw more targets than T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd. In his NFL debut, after having an admittedly bad preseason, Ja'Marr Chase was the number one wide receiver for the Cincinnati Bengals. That is massive. He is a must-start for me going forward. Like, I mean, you saw the talent. You saw the chemistry with Joe Burrow. This is a guy who I think, you know, I don't blame you for not starting him week one. To me, he's a must-start going forward.
Now I got to figure out who to bench, because I have CeeDee Lamb, Adam Thielen, and then
maybe a little trade bait.
Cooper Kupp.
Wow.
Kenyon Drake is my flex, so.
I would bench Drake for him.
Okay, yeah. That's...
Hey, Drake had a solid game for you last night, you know, like in a rotational role. But personally, if I'm setting a lineup at the beginning, and of course, you factor in injuries and matchups and all that stuff, but I would be starting Ja'Marr Chase over Kenyon Drake.
Good to know. Really good stuff, Joe. Yeah. Appreciate the time as always. We'll definitely do it again soon.
All right, fantastic, guys. Good talking to you.
Joe Dolan, Fantasy Points, joining us here on the show, helping you with a little bit of your fantasy football needs after week one. We'll do that from time to time here on the show. We'll have much more coming here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. But first, kick off the new pro football season with the King of Sportsbooks. Sign up with BetMGM using the code 1025GAME, and your first wager is totally risk-free, up to $1,000. Join the action for all the Gridiron Showdowns from Thursday through Monday night each week. When you register with BetMGM, you'll also get instant access to parlay selection features, live betting options, player props, and daily boosted odds specials on some of the biggest games. From hard-hitting tackles to epic touchdowns, the King of Sportsbooks takes every play to a whole new level of excitement. Simply download the BetMGM app today or go to BetMGM.com and enter the code 1025GAME, and you'll get back up to $1,000 on your very first wager. Turn game time into showtime with BetMGM. New customer offer, paid in free bets. You must be 21 years or older, must be in Tennessee. Visit BetMGM.com for a full list of terms and conditions. For problem gambling support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.
Back here on the show on this Tuesday, special thanks to Joe Dolan. Hopefully we helped you out with some tips for your fantasy football team. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, presented by Curation CBD. Curation CBD products curated for life. Let's see who's been listening to the show. By the way, we'll go east and talk with Vince Ferrara. We weren't able to do it yesterday. Talk about Tennessee's tough loss to Pittsburgh on Saturday at Neyland Stadium. But we'll do all things Vols with Vince coming up at high noon. But let's find out who's been listening, because we didn't prompt you. Just want to find out if you've been paying attention. Be caller 7 right now, 615-737-1025. That is our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You'll have a chance to win a pair of tickets to see Alice Cooper and Ace Frehley at Ascend Amphitheater on Sunday, October 3rd. Alice Cooper and Ace Frehley at Ascend Amphitheater on Sunday, October 3rd. So good luck. Be lucky caller 7 for those tickets. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Titans, because we didn't get to do it as a group yesterday. It was a little bit fragmented. Willie, you were gone in the morning time. We spent a heavy dose, that's all we talked about, of course. And then you guys, when I was out there, went heavy dose again in the afternoon. So let's talk about what took place on Sunday. It is 1 week. We played Mike Vrabel's press conference live. He had some very strong comments about his elite wide receiver Julio Jones on that play. And he was so mad that he used a word you can't use on the radio. So we had to dump that and bleep that out. But overall, how does this team get up off the mat and rebound and try to go out to an incredibly tough place to win and try to get their first win of the season?
An incredibly tough place to win in general, and a team that was very impressive in the first game, in the Seahawks. Everything that they wanted to have happen, happened. They go on the road and win pretty easily in Indy. So, wow, what a huge challenge. And I agree with you guys 100% that today is a picking up the pieces. Today is a let's try to – yesterday, at least on our show, I think there's a lot of emotion. What the heck? How could that happen? All of that. But I spent some time just trying to sit there and go, all right, what are all the things that Mike Vrabel is going down the checklist now of, okay, here's all of the things that went wrong. It's a long list.
And you've written some stuff down like what we were kind of talking about this in the group text last night of what's a week one problem. It's week one. Like, okay, mm-hmm. just chalk it up to it's week one. And what stands out is, yeah, this could be a real problem that they're not going to get fixed.
And Darren, one of the things that I threw out there yesterday, and I'm sure you guys discussed it some, you had to in the back of your mind as you watched that on Sunday, say to yourself, if you didn't think this was possible, then you probably had the blinders on. You probably had the pom-poms a little too much to think that it was all going to come in perfect. The problem is just nothing went right. I think, you know, realistically, I was thinking they might look a little rusty or they might look a little discombobulated for part of the game on offense, but they'll kick it in. It should kick in here. And it just never kicked in. And it went anything but that. It went so wrong. But we mentioned many times, all of us did, that, hey, when you don't practice and you got guys coming and going for COVID and you guys, you know, coming off of a long-term injury and you got some new guys you're trying to work in, you got a new offensive coordinator. There were a lot of things that just screamed, hey, it may not look great the first week. So I kept thinking of Scott Pioli. Remember the long term.
Yeah.
How it looks in week one is part of it, but you got to be willing to live with it, knowing that or hoping that by December it should be a lot better. Julio Jones was the prime example.
Right.
He hasn't practiced. What he looks like in week one, you hope, will not be what it looks like in December.
But to Vrabel's comment yesterday, and it was very poignant, and it was, you know, I don't always agree with doing that stuff in the media, but I didn't have an issue with what he said yesterday of basically calling Julio out. Like, you are a guy that this organization gave up a lot to bring in. You're a very highly paid, talented player. You do not need to be the one that I'm signaling out to say, don't do dumb bleep to hurt the team. And you did something dumb to hurt the team. If that doesn't happen, if it's third and one and they get it, who knows what that game looks like? You know, we'll never know.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a huge mistake that hurt a team that was already bleeding because of how the game had started.
And needed desperately a jump start.
Desperately. And that
first four drives, as we talked about yesterday, Willie, while you were on the golf course, they netted negative 16 yards.
Oh, I'm well
first
aware.
Four drives.
I'm well aware. And if when you go back through that play-by-play and then you circle that play that he gets the penalty, it really jumps out at you as the, you know, worst timing that you can have. So
I mean,
it's just amazing how bad it went. And how much they did, like the sack fumble that looks like a touchdown, it ends up on the one, and they almost get out of it and hold them to a field goal again. But an unblocked guy coming in, just the major, major breakdowns. It just was really, really shockingly bad.
Yeah, and they even got, if you think about it, they end up, Tannehill incompletes to McNichols, trying to pick up that yardage, and so they have to punt. They end up making Arizona go 3-and-out. So at least then you're thinking, okay, well maybe they figured out how to get out of it, and they got the ball back. But
and immediately get sacked on the first down of the next series.
And the next possession, that was the fake punt that I still
right. And so again, you're saying, hey, maybe a little spark.
Yeah,
good timely call. They got it.
And so because of all that, you know, maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe if, you know, he doesn't get the penalty in the convert, who knows what happens, just the way they were playing. But we'll never know. I still think it took a lot of wind out of their sails, and it's something that just absolutely can't happen.
It's just like the missed field goal and extra point. I mean,
oh boy.
Ultimately, do we think it has anything, you know, to do with the outcome of the game? Probably not. I think you feel pretty safe about that. But these things, to your point, Chase, they add up.
Yep.
So a missed field goal, a missed extra point, a dumb play. It's going to be third and one. Now it's third and 16. That drive is over. That series is over. A play here, a play there, a missed tackle. I mean, these things all add up, and the next thing you know, it's a very, very lopsided loss, right? So is it maybe just one? No, but I mean, there's a lot of things that had to add up to get to a 38-13 drubbing at home.
Sure.
And I think it's, you know, it is not one thing. We know that. There's a lot of other things that we haven't talked about. It's something that I brought up many times during the offseason, not saying that I didn't, you know, that I was down on it because I didn't know. I mean, I was willing to give it a try. I mean, I've said Mike Vrabel knows Todd Downing better than us. All we can do is go off people that we would have on the show that didn't have flattering things to say about Todd Downing as an offensive coordinator. That's all we can go off of. I mean, I was willing to give him a chance. It is 1 week. But right now, I also brought up, like, we don't know what it's going to look like without Arthur Smith. And right now, through 1 week and 1 week only, it looks really bad. They looked very inept on offense for a team that we suspect are going to score a lot of points this season, like they did last year. And what's really scary to me is, you know, Vrabel did go down that rabbit hole, and Chase and I talked about it yesterday on the show, Willie, of, you know, people don't want to hear, you know, we need to coach better, we need to play better, all that thing. But he did say they were outcoached, and here's what's concerning to me about that. What is the one thing we've been saying about Arizona the whole offseason? Boy, they got lots of talent.
Mm-hmm.
I really like their quarterback. He's mobile. He's got an arm. Boy, I like those receivers. Ooh, there's a whole lot to like. They brought in J.J. Watt. And,
yep.
Ooh, boy, there's a lot to like with that team. But, gosh, you know who we don't really trust? You know what's probably their biggest hindrance? Their head coach.
Yep.
And Mike Vrabel just told us we got out-coached by the guy. Everybody basically around the league is like, Cliff Kingsbury? Not sold on him as a head coach. And yet Mike Vrabel told us yesterday, you got out-coached by a coach. If you could say you're out-coached by Pete Carroll, everybody's like, yeah, okay, well, Pete Carroll's a really, really successful. If you get out-coached by Andy Reid, like, okay, Andy Reid's won a lot of football games as a head coach. When you get out-coached by Cliff Kingsbury, like, that's concerning to me.
Yes.
Well, why did you and your staff get out-coached by a guy when you look at Arizona's weakness? We probably would identify the head coach as their biggest weakness.
I would divide it up in my mind. There's always a weirdness of week one in that it's really hard to – you have all summer to come up with your game one game plan, and you know the other team doesn't know exactly what's coming. They can't do anything based on your preseason games or anything like that. You got different players than you had last year, different quarters. So you have that – element of surprise,
right,
on both sides of the ball. So it does become a really interesting chess match of what are you going to pull out. You could come out in the wishbone if you wanted to, and it would be a huge element of surprise. I'm being extreme, but I didn't think that the Titans defense was out schemed. I thought Kyler Murray just made some incredible plays. There's still issues of talent on the Titans defense, but overall, I was more in the camp of, I'm tipping my hat. Kyler Murray made some plays that are hard to defend, where the guy was covering the receiver, and the throw was perfect, and the guy made a great catch, and boom.
Yeah,
but on the offense, was a different thing. You just heard Joe Dolan talking about Derrick Henry.
Sure did.
They did not ever get into the rhythm that resembled anything like last year, where it's Henry and then the play action off of Henry. They only ran two play action passes, according to Joe.
Yep.
And, of course, it doesn't help when your first couple carries go for -3 and 1 and -1. They could never even get the first handoff to get the rhythm started. So nothing got on track. But the coordination of the offense and the ability to come out,
right,
and say, okay, here's our offense, and you haven't seen it before, and there's nothing you can do. They had no scheme plays where a guy popped open or anything.
And
they had no
the
separation, nothing
from
anybody.
That's my biggest concern with this offense right now. It's on paper, in my opinion, feel free to push back. If Henry pulls the hammy and he's got to sit for a week, because of the talent on this offense, I feel you should be okay. You got A.J. Brown. You got Julio Jones. Does it hurt not having him? Absolutely, it does. But you should be able to, if it's not working or if he's not available, you should be able to make it work because you have guys that can make plays. those guys weren't making plays until much later in the game when it was getting out of reach.
Right.
Then you have
and
A.J.
Brown.
That's
not the real game plan. Yeah.
Right. But my I guess my concern is, can Todd Downing operate when Henry's not working? Or is it so predicated on Henry working to set up play action like mm-hmm. you're talking about, all those things that they've been successful, that Arthur Smith was successful? Can he deviate from that if he has to? Because it looked like on Sunday he couldn't.
Also, I think we all have watched enough football to know that you can have a great game plan, but if you can't block, your plays aren't going to work.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a one-week thing or whatever, but we know the offensive line did not get it done.
But don't you make adjustments, right? If things aren't going your way early on, don't you make adjustments? There's ways around that. Right? I mean, did it look like they were making adjustments?
Last year, once again, they had all kinds of problems on the offensive line last year. The whole Isaiah Wilson fiasco and LaJuan's injury, and they made it work. They got it. They got production. Roger Saffold was playing hurt a lot last year, but they certainly didn't make it work by any stretch. It unraveled. It got worse as the day went on. They never had any answers for J.J. Watt and Chandler Jones. They lost the battle for 60 minutes.
Yeah.
That's what I kept thinking is, with all that talent and you would think the will and the crowd there, the crowd was just always anxious. Okay, this will be the drive where they get it going. This is one of the top offenses in the league. The cream is going to rise to the top.
Yeah.
They'll find answers, even with LaJuan missing a couple series, all of that stuff. And you're just like shocked that it never really kicked in.
But you know why I was concerned and ultimately why it didn't kick in? When I watched Arizona, take their everything we have said about Cliff Kingsbury, so valid. He had that team ready to play. Or somebody did. But I'll give him credit because he's head coach. That team was ready to play. The Titans weren't.
It was not an inspired effort.
And you could tell from the start, that first play, they didn't look in sync. They didn't look ready to play. And that, to me, when you're not ready to play, falls on the shoulders of one individual, and that's the head coach. So
it's
going to. It's his job. It's his job to get – it's his job and his staff's job to get them ready to play. And they weren't ready to play. And ultimately, it's going to come back to him. Is that a week one thing, or is that because they haven't practiced all together at the same time? You had guys out with COVID. I mean, he got smart yesterday and said any excuse you can come up with applies here. Okay. Well, how do you get rid of those excuses?
I give Mike Vrabel the benefit of the doubt. I think for the most part, this has not been a problem with this team not being ready to play. They've had some bad halves. I could not believe it didn't get any better. A flat start is one thing, but just a
right
a,
because
a flat
they have
game
fallen behind
from the
before
offense.
And battled back. Right? I mean, we've seen that before.
Yeah,
I mean,
they have the kind of spurt ability on offense to get back in a game.
Yeah,
when they have
exactly.
a flat start.
That's exactly right.
I can't put that on Vrabel, but I just didn't see the fire. You know, you had a little flicker, and you're like, okay, here we go. You're like, Henry strung together a couple good runs there in the third quarter. You're like, okay, give me a little momentum. Maybe he pops one here and that it changes the tone. You just never really got that. The interception by Byard, which maybe could have been a spark, they cash it in, and they can't get a stop on the next thing. It just never got going. And this was another theme of mine yesterday. They weren't alone. The Packers, you can go down on the list. Either the Bills had a dud. Yet yesterday, they didn't look anything like they were supposed to look like. The Buccaneers last year in their opener, that was a dud. It didn't go well. You can recover from just a nightmare first game, and now you even have an extra week. You have 17 games to pull out of a bad hole. It just was really stunning. So, again, our theme of, is this a week one problem, or how many of these things are problems that are going to fester?
Yeah.
Well, the problem that they've got right now is something we've talked about, is their schedule's brutal, and there's really no weeks off.
Yes.
I mean, it just comes in waves, right? It just keeps coming, and it's like you don't have time to feel sorry for yourself, because like as we're sitting here talking about, you get boat raced at home, and what do you have to do? You have to pick yourself up and go play Seattle out there. And then, oh, by the way, after that game, then you get Indy here?
I referenced yesterday, Darren, and you will remember this well, 2009. Joe had this article of this is the most anticipated season. They had a spirited discussion about when is the last time we've had this much build up to a season. And I think you could make a case for 2009. They had the best record in 2008. They were the one seed. They had a disappointing end of the season, but you had a young Chris Johnson on the rise. You had, you had questions for sure, but you had a lot of hype because they were
coming
really
off a monster year.
Yeah, a great year. Yeah, that's what I mean.
13-3.
That's what I mean. What happened in 2009? Yep. They started 0-6.
Yep.
Things snowballed.
Yep.
And you were thinking, boy, surely they'll get it fixed this week.
Yep.
And the next thing you know, in week six, they lose 59-0.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, 59-0.
I think this is where when there's so
and
many –
and they still recover, but it was too late.
Yeah, it was too late. And that was – I mean, the next year was Jeff Fisher's last year. But to Jeff's credit –
But they ended up 8-8.
They did.
So you knew the talent was there. And it was just like, boy, if they just could have just treaded water in the first couple of weeks and won a game or two in there, they could have been fine.
Sure. And to Jeff's credit – you know, he was good at getting something out of nothing, you know, with some of those teams that, you know, he went 8-8 with that maybe they weren't very good, or if they were battling through injuries or just circumstances like you're talking about, he could pull the best out. This is where we're really going to see just how good Mike Vrabel is as a head coach. It's year four. There are a ton of expectations with this team. It's 1 week. But how do you temper those expectations? How do you manage through injuries, which he's already having to do in week one? And how do you get the best out of what you have? And he didn't get the best out of what he has in the first week.
Yeah, I have faith in him in that department. I think he's good in that area.
Yeah, here is something, though, to keep in mind, though. Listen to this. And this is, once again, it's dangerous in the NFL, right? Like trying to, like, this is a win, this is a loss. I'm just saying, the reason I brought up the Colts game, so the Colts lose to Seattle, Titans lose to Arizona. Now the Titans have to fly out to Seattle and play the Seahawks out there. It's going to be brutal. It's going to be really tough. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but you could see it being another loss, unfortunately. The Colts stay at home and they host the L.A. Rams. Can they beat L.A.? Yeah, they could rebound and beat L.A., but we're also looking at that game going, and they're not the favorite. They're the underdog at home against the Rams. The point is, there is a real chance. Week three, that game at Nissan Stadium could be setting up for the loser to start off the year 0-3.
Yeah.
The loser of that game could be 0-3 on the season. You were just playing out, Willie. Now, for the Titans, you know, they get the Jets. So after that, I mean, the 0-6 thing seems a little bit of a stretch because you get Jets, Jags. I'm just saying, though, 0-3 hole is not a hole you want to be in the NFL. As we know, the odds are stacked way against you of recovering and getting to the playoffs. But that is a real harsh reality for both the Titans and the Colts if they don't find a way to get week two victories.
The good thing is that you're in a four-team division, with two of the teams being the Texans and the Jags. So you may not have to win. If you know, we made our predictions. I said 11-6. If you know, there's a scenario where with the schedule being what it is, maybe you only have to win 10 to win this division. If the Colts have, because that's the other thing you're hanging your hat on now, is you got a little bit of a mulligan because the Colts look like they got some issues. But time will tell. But you're right, Darren. There's a very good possibility, because they'll both be underdogs this week, that will be a pair of 0-2 teams in week three with some desperation involved.
We'll obviously do predictions more towards the end of the week and, you know, pick six and things like that. But just the being as early as it is in the season, it wouldn't shock me at all. And I'll say it. I think one of the two ends up with an upset this week. I just could see it. I could see it happen.
You can look awfully different in week two than week one. We all know that. We've seen enough of this league.
As I've always prefaced, we're critical of Mike Vrabel when he deserves it. I do think that there are aspects of him that he's a good coach. And I do think that he is taking this personally. Yeah, he would rather spend time with his team, talking to his team, than talking to all of us. That's fine. I do believe that this team is going to be much more prepared going out to Seattle than they were with the egg that they laid on Sunday.
Let's come back. I think there is immense pressure on Downing in this game.
Yeah, I agree. We'll come back to do that and talk about that to wrap up hour number two of Darren, Donick, and Chase. By the way, congratulations, John Autry. John was listening to the show. John was prompted to call in, and he was lucky caller 7. John, congratulations. Go enjoy that show at Ascend Amphitheater, and thanks for listening. See, it pays to listen to Darren, Donick, and Chase. We'll be back. Silly Underdog Picks is back. Get your friends, your family, your coworkers. Play as a group. Sign up and play today. It's a great contest. It's a lot of fun on Thursdays. You should check it out. We make our picks at noon. You listeners, you get 3 picks. 3 underdog teams. If your underdog wins their game outright, you get the points attached to them. It's not a contest against the spread. Your underdog team must win the game outright, like mine do, every Thursday. 2-0 again, just saying. Weekly prizes on the line. So you don't have to play every week. You can jump in at any point. So we would love for you to be a part of it. The numbers are big, but we want to keep them growing. You can win a pair of tickets to a sporting event or a concert in Nashville. Still waiting for the commish to tweet out the congratulatory tweets. Don't see him this year, but it's interesting. He's done it in the past. Go to thegamenashville.com or ESPN The Game Nashville mobile app to sign up and play now. Silly Underdogs, presented by Volunteer Hose and Gas.
If he gets to 6-0, he's going to be unbearable. I mean, he's already close.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
Like, you are going to be absolutely unbearable.
Well, let me just say this. I feel like I have to step it up because it's rare that you get called out for not being unbearable. Like, Kelly Holcomb called me out and said, gosh, I would have thought you would have trash-talked more than you did. Yeah. He's like, I thought you would have been way more over the top. You went 2-0. And then I went 2-0 again, and, you know, then I sent you guys some gifts last night.
Congratulations.
You did.
Yeah, but still waiting for the commish, who's done it in the past for Kelly Holcomb and Chris Sanders, but I've missed those this year. 2 weeks in, 4-0, nothing on Twitter, nothing. Just say nada. Yeah.
Cry me a river.
Have I said nada? Nothing.
Zilch.
Crickets.
And Willie says you get nothing and like it.
And now you know why Kelly Holcomb wants the commish fired. Stuff like that. Balls constantly dropped. Nothing from Willie D 1025. Nothing on Twitter. All right, let's talk about I can't believe it went on that long. All right, we're going to go east, by the way, to Knoxville coming up at high noon. There is immense pressure on Todd Downing. There's no way to get around this. Huge. Because this team, there's no secret. They've got to score. And against Seattle, you're going to have to score. You're not going to beat them 10-9. That's not going to happen. The Seahawks, this just in, their offense looked pretty potent again.
And their defense did.
And their defense looked good. So you're going to have to go out there, and you're going to have to put points on the board. Question is, how do they do it? So how do they pick themselves? Let's just focus on offense. How do they get things rolling? Because I think we've talked about it. I think it's unfair of the NFL to say you better be in the 30s every week, right, to get wins. Like, that's unfair in the NFL. But, boy, you better make darn sure you're in the 20s, probably mid-20s, if you want to, you know, be on the right side more times than not.
This is what worries me about Downing. Because, like I said before, the defense – I didn't think the game plan and the scheme was that bad. I thought on the pivotal plays of the game when the Cardinals had the ball, there were some plays where you just had to say, you know what, that's a really difficult play that he just made. Kyler Murray's running around, throws it back at the end zone. DeAndre Hopkins is one of just a handful of guys who can make that catch and get the feet down. There were so many players like, well, Surely they're going to get him here. No way that's going to be complete. Guy makes a great catch. Guy's all over him. He's on the sideline. Got the catch. Got the feet down. So that's not really scheme. But this is what worries me about Downing, is if you have a certain amount of this happen over the course of the year, it's not the media is going to get on you or the fans are going to get on you. It's that maybe there's a little doubt that creeps in from the team. The yeah. play comes in. Like, there's got to be confidence that what we're doing is going to work. Last year, they got into an incredible rhythm. It didn't happen overnight for Arthur Smith. But once they got rolling with Tannehill, they got into an amazing groove there where they go 18-8 with Tannehill as the starter, where there is a sense of, I don't know what play he's going to call, but when he calls that play, this is going to work. Our rhythm, we're going to give it to Henry, we're going to fake, we're going to do all this stuff. It was really clicking and humming. You didn't get any of that on Sunday. And that's one thing to have it happen for 1 week, but if it goes for a while and all these does the offense start to question, hey, are we running the right? Why are we running these plays? Well, these plays aren't working. Nobody's open. What's going on? That's what I'm concerned about, is you start losing that swagger, that belief that the offense, because you have a belief.
Well,
they had
no swagger on Sunday.
Yeah, you have the belief that there's talent there. And so, but we know there's questions personnel-wise on the offensive line right now. That's a big thing. But when will the doubt creep in? That's why I think coming back with a really strong game plan and a good scheme, that would mean a lot to Todd Downing, just getting his roots down as the next guy here.
Well, and what is Tannehill's trust in him right now? Tannehill obviously has carte blanche at this point in his career that if he sees something at the line, he can change the play. But, you know, how much is it he gets the play and he's going, you know, really, that's what we're doing? Like, okay, we might adjust here. You know, they got to be on the same page. I mean, right. if anybody, it's the quarterback and the OC, the play caller, that have to be on the same page. And, you know, again, one game, but how much of that were they on the same page before the game and things just went wrong? Are they still trying to get on the same page? I mean, listen, Arthur Smith, we all know that his first few games, and granted it was a different quarterback, it took a while. You know, it took a little bit. But then when Tannehill took over, there was just something that clicked. That those two, they were on the same page, and it worked. If even though you're putting your own spin on it as an OC, you're changing things a little bit, it's basically the same stuff, the same concept that they have been running the last few years. So it goes down to, if things aren't working, I think it's a communication thing, that it's something between the guy calling the play and the guy then running the play, which is Tannehill.
And then, because we talked about when you add a piece like Julio Jones, how much do you then start to get pulls on both sides? Hey, maybe they should just be throwing more. They have Julio Jones and A.J. Brown. Let's just turn this into a different offense where you wing it all over the place. And how much does that take you away from the identity that you had before you brought in Julio Jones? That's the danger, I think, because they got behind, and then they still tried that series where they gave it to Henry about 5-6 times. Remember, he broke one. He was one guy away from hitting the home run. And he had his best runs of the day, but yet you're still going, man, you're way behind. You need to go no
harder.
You're
trying to establish the run when you don't need to be establishing the run. The run's not working.
So it's just they were reaching all day to find a rhythm that never came.
Yeah, and that's the part that concerns me the most, is does he know when to not abandon the run, but does he know when, you know, you got to – it's not working right now, so you got to do something that will work.
And in the past, there have been some games where you're like, can they still run the ball here? Yeah. Or maybe they should. And Henry would break a long one. And you're like, sure. You can still use Henry when you're behind.
And then there's some games where the stats are misleading, where, oh, Henry had a good game, but you go and you look because the passing game was working and they got a lead, and then they just started running to kill clock, and that's where Derek got the yards. You're going to have games like that. I mean, that's just the way it is. But with an offense that is so predicated on the run, you also have to know when you gotta step away from it. And also, I mean, the tight ends.
The blocking
with the tight ends.
We talked about that.
Firkser struggles being a two-way tight end, and if you're going to be the starter, you got to be able to do both.
Corey Davis is a blocker.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Reynolds wasn't there. That's supposed to be one of the things he does well is blocking. That is something to see because there were a lot of plays where they got to Henry before he could get going, and that's the only way you can stop him. Once he gets going, you can't stop him. But if you can get him before he gets the momentum going, which happened a lot, they got a hand on him. They tripped him up. Somebody lost a battle one-on-one. So the blocking was not as good.
We'll get back more into the Titans a little later on in the show. Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach, going to join us at 1 o'clock. But when we come back, Vince Ferrara usually joins us on Mondays, 99.1 The Sports Animal. We'll talk some Vols with him when we return. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
Babe, did you see that Moto Casino is giving a $1,776,000 worth of prizes?
That's why they're called America's Social Casino, celebrating the birth of America bigger than anyone else.
You can win incredible experiences at NASCAR and F1 races and a grand prize of 1 million sweeps coins.
So what are you waiting for? Spin now on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.